This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 17th of September 2015 on Monocle 24.
Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Georgina Godwin. Well, today I'm joined by Charmaine Lovegrove, who's co-founder and creative director of Dialogue Scouting. Earlier this week, the Man Booker Prize shortlist was announced, and while we've made a decent dent in the six finalists here on the Arts Review, we thought we'd look at the two books we're yet to cover, and that's A Spool of Blue Thread by Anne Tyler, and of course the favourite to win, which is A Little Life. As well as that, we'll crack the spine of Max Porter's new release, Grief is a Thing with Feathers, a novel about a family coming to terms with the death of their mother. That's all to come here on the Monocle Arts Review. Do stay tuned. Welcome to the show, Charmaine. So before we get on to the Man Booker shortlist, let's begin with your pick of what to read this week. And I was very impressed by the way that you told us how much you wanted to do this book, because it's clear that you have an enormous amount of passion for Max Porter's debut, Grief is a Thing with Feathers. Why?
I just think it's a totally different book that we haven't seen before. And I think it's really important to highlight books that are bold in its sort of linguistic merit, as well as telling us stories that from a completely different perspective. We read about grief and we read about parents and family settings all the time, but never really sort of taking into account the sort of the literary prowess of someone like Ted Hughes, who Max Porter in his book is heavily referred to. Max was is an editor at Granter, and he edited Eleanor Catton's Luminaries, as we're talking, we're in a Booker area today. And he really is a heavyweight within British publishing. And so this is his first novel. And because it sort of goes between prose and poetry and really expands upon the written word, then I thought it was a great one to bring up.
They describe it as part novella, part polyphonic fable, part essay on grief. It sounds an all-encompassing work, and it clearly had an emotional effect on you.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, I think that, you know, as I said, we look at grief from so many different perspectives, but to start with a story of these two boys and their father, and understanding that they've lost their wife and mother, and then to have this crow who acts as a muse, a friend, a listener, a therapist, and basically is behind the family and stays with them until they need them. I've never read anything like that before, and of course you know the weight of Hughes is behind it, but it's a fiercely original piece of work.
And as you say, it's based on the Ted Hughes poem Crow. And the father in the book is, in fact, a Hughes scholar.
Absolutely. And so you get that, you know, that sort of the Sylvia Plath suicide is when Hughes wrote Crow following that. And I think, you know, all of those things kind of reminds us that, you know, there's always history and culture to everything that we're writing. And I think that Max Porter brings this out in a really illuminating way.
And that book was longlisted for the Guardian First Book Award, and it's published by Faber. It's out this week. Now, let's move on then to the Booker Prize, because the shortlist was announced on Tuesday. And as a whole, what do you think of the shortlist as a whole? It's been hailed as being the most diverse one yet.
Yeah, and it is. And I think that's, you know, I've said on the show before, I think it's so important to look at the diversity of writers that are within the English language. And, you know, when I first read about the inclusion of American and international writers into the prize, I wasn't sure how that was going to work. But I think it's definitely going to keep British writers and British publishers on our toes, and keep us thinking about how to bring new stories to wider audiences that we haven't necessarily seen. And I think that's the important thing about the prize, is that it engages readers. And ultimately, that's what we all want to do, is get readers reading great books.
Now, I went to the prize event on Tuesday evening, and the judges said that there was such a variety variety of writing styles, cultural heritage and literary backgrounds of the writers on the shortlist. New authors alongside established names. Anne Tyler, of course, the oldest one there. She's, I think, 72. But apart from that, a very, very young shortlist. And, of course, many people of colour, which is something that is very unusual in this list.
Yeah, and that, you know, I think that because the judging panel was so diverse that without, you know, people say, oh, were they looking for diversity? And I think actually this is what really happens, to not to be too controversial, but this is what happens when you don't just have white middle class men in the room, and then you don't get a white male middle class list. And that's hugely important because, again, readers aren't of one type. And we need to be engaging lots of different readers from lots of different communities and lots of different backgrounds. And that's exactly what I feel will happen now.
So as a whole, we've seen the first Jamaican-born author to be shortlisted, and that's Marlon James, and a former nominee, Tom McCarthy, is back again. But let's have a look at the two books in detail that we haven't yet done on this show. So let's start off with A Spool of Blue Thread, and that, of course, is Anne Tyler's book. Her past works won the Pulitzer, so more award-winning stuff for her?
Yeah, I mean, I feel that it's so fascinating, this kind of family story from America, and it's somehow we never, ever get bored of it. But I think it's because, unlike some of her contemporaries, such as Alice Munro or Marianne Robinson, Anne Tyler's really able to get a sense of kind of humour and irony into sometimes what's quite despairing family situations. So we meet the Whitshank family and the mother, Abby, and father, Red, as they're heading into early old age. And they have two sons and two daughters and multiple grandchildren. And this book is really about the unravelling of a family who have tried to keep quite conservative, tight-knit roots, and as they are getting older, then there's an unfurling of the lies that they've tried to hold close.
I think this is her 20th novel. Yeah. I mean, do you get a sense of that this is somebody who's really matured in her writing?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're to follow an author's career like hers, and she always writes, usually writes about Baltimore, she usually writes about families. And I think that in this, I mean, it's difficult to say because, you know, she is 72. So, you know, and she has said this is her last novel. And I think you do really feel like she is saying this is everything. And it's a really incredible journey to kind of go back and look at some of her earlier works. But the family is always central to her books, and the family home and this sense of hearth that comes with being part of a family. And I think she's really mastered it in this book.
In the way that Jane Austen does. In fact, she's compared to us, and she's also compared to Updike.
Yes.
Let's move on now to A Little Life. And this is our last man Booker title by Hanya Yanagihara. It explores the boundaries of friendship as four classmates move to New York to start their lives. The story is beautifully done. It's amazingly structured as well. I was so impressed by the structure of the book.
Yeah, it's 700 pages. You know, I think that it's an incredible feat to be able to write such a tome. We've already seen, as said, the Luminaries earlier, that one that's also a large book at 650, I think. And you know, to be able to hold structure and narrative over so many pages, and especially when you're dealing with issues of essentially middle class, a group of middle class men who become successful within their lives as artists, as architects, and one's a lawyer and one's an actor. And I think the book has this sort of pervading sense of success until you get 100 pages in, and then you realise the book is actually about abuse and the abuse of one of the characters, Jude, who was brought up by monks in a monastery and then was abducted by one of the monks and taken and was living with one of the monks, brother Luke, who abused him. And this is really Jude's story, and the other, you know, that sense of achievement and aspiration kind of fades into the background, and then we're following the life of a man who's trying to come to terms with his childhood abuse.
It is an extraordinary piece of work, and it's one that I think certainly for me, I read it and then just needed to go away and think about it and weep.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think the thing is that this is why these stories should be on the list, because it should be about explaining to us a different way of living and things that we haven't encountered, and the essence of the human life that we haven't encountered. And I think that this book brings it absolutely to the fore. And the focus on individual suffering and that need for survival, I think, is so apt. And Yana Gihara, she really handles it masterfully.
I interviewed her recently and she told me that the book was written in an absolute white heat of passion. She said that she'd finished her day job. She writes for T, the New York Times style magazine. And then she would come home and just write and write and write and write and write and write. And she said it felt almost like being in some kind of trance. And I think that comes across in the book, doesn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And she's dealt with forms of sexual abuse in her first book. And I think, you know, it's obviously an area that's really poignant to her for whatever personal reasons, and I think that ferociousness and that anger, you can definitely feel it within your characters when you're reading, and you know, it really changes like your perception of somebody that's in that situation. And so we can only be grateful for her for exercising that passion on these pages.
You mentioned her first book and The People in the Trees. It was based on a real life case of a virologist, Daniel Carlton Gajusik. I can't really say his name properly. But that book, again, now getting, of course, a lot more attention than it did the first time around, didn't sink without a trace exactly at the beginning, but really didn't get the attention that it deserved.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that this again shows the importance of prizes and the importance of writers being given the opportunity to have a career. And so that if their first book doesn't work in the way that publishers hope, that they are given that time to then publish their next book and to have a career where they've got something to say, that they've got an opinion that can give us a brevity of a life.
Mm. And so to conclude then, just having a look at the Booker as a whole, you mentioned, and it's a very valid point, that these prizes do encourage writers and that they are really vital, I suppose, for keeping the interest in books alive in some ways, for keeping them on the front pages at least.
Absolutely. You know, in the last few years, we've really lost a lot of valuable space in terms of literary criticism in our newspapers. And I think that, you know, when I look at a country like Jamaica, then we see like Usain Bolt. So then to have Marlon James, it really just shows on the Booker Prize, it shows that that there is a duality of culture that exists in these places. And the same with Nigeria, with having the fishermen. You know, it's that there. And I think that that's the thing that's in this debate that we're having culturally at the moment. And politically, I think the main thing for me is to be able to show these like duality of cultures that exist in lots of different places. And if a prize can do that, then we're all going to be happy and we'll all benefit from it.
Absolutely. Well, the Booker Prize shortlist was announced this week. 6 books on that shortlist. And the final prize, and of course there will only be one, is on the 13th of October. So that will be announced in London on that date. And I'm sure that we can arrange to have you back to talk about the eventual winner. So that's all we have time for here on this Monocle Arts Review. Charmaine Lovegrove, thanks very much for coming in. My producer here on this show today was Holly Fisher. I'm Georgina Godwin, and you can join us again tomorrow for our film review from the Toronto International Film Festival. But for now, thanks very much for listening.